tolerance becomes an issue, right? We're always seeking what we first found. That cycle of addiction that,
yes,
you know.
This is Bill McKibben from 350.org, and you're listening to WGXE, that's 90.7 on your FM dial, ACRA, putting the community back in radio.
Hi, this is Michael Wilde inviting you to Mostly Singles, and if you like what you're hearing, you'll love this show. Rarefied music, premieres, and guests. It's different every time. And a podcast, too. Go to WGXC.org. Mostly Singles, every fourth Tuesday at 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by the nonprofit Human Connection Arts and its new Art Center. The center offers creative retreats and events to share, discover, and elevate on its 12-acre property in Earlton. Community members are invited to an open house on June 14th and 15th. Information at humanconnectionarts.org/center.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support Jonathan of Hudson, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, June 5th. Local early morning temperatures range from 56 degrees in Steventown to 69 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 62 degrees. Air quality will be moderate. Some Canadian smoke will be wafting over our area. All counties to the south are looking at an ozone warning. Pollen levels will be high. You know, this is the sort of weather that televisions were made for. It gets pretty bad out there today. We get a high of 90 that will linger most of the afternoon. Chance of rain after 4 p.m. Overnight, temperatures dip to only 66 degrees. Tomorrow, not as hot, but definitely more rainy. And it falls all day long. We get a high of 80 at 2 p.m. Overnight, the rain continues and we get a low of 63. Saturday, more rain all day long. We get a high of 74 at 4 p.m. Sunday, break in the rain, but only in the morning. We get a high of 76. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 5:58 a.m., high tide at 11:29 a.m., and low tide once again at 6:13 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 62 degrees, and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:12 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:17 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be fast at 646 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently a little better than solar max standard with an S2 level noise floor. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 92. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Public News Service Friday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford.
Russia Friday launched one of the largest barrages of missiles and drones of the war at targets across Ukraine, killing at least four people and damaging buildings in Kyiv in what Moscow suggested was retaliation for Ukraine's recent audacious assault on Russian strategic bomber bases. That from the New York Times. They report over the course of some 5 hours after midnight, Russia launched 407 drones and decoys, nearly 40 cruise missiles, and 6 ballistic missiles from land, air, and sea at towns and cities across the breadth of Ukraine. Meantime, Ukrainians who fled the war in their home country for temporary routes in North Dakota are waiting with worry about their ability to keep working in the U.S. as the future of a key support program is up in the air.
Separate from refugees or asylum seekers, humanitarian parole gives people escaping a global conflict a chance to work and live temporarily in an American community. As reported by North Dakota News Cooperative, several hundred Ukrainians in North Dakota fall under that status, taking on a range of local jobs the past 2 years. Yaroslav Rizanyov is one of them, and with the Trump administration trying to roll back immigration relief, he's living day to day.
My work permit expired in a couple of days. I need to work because I have a lot of bills to pay, you know.
Legal wrangling continues over humanitarian parole, with the U.S. Supreme Court recently allowing programs with 4 other countries to be suspended. Supporters of the Ukrainian designation say there's still too much uncertainty about applications for those folks, renewing concerns they'll be forced back to a war-torn region. I'm Mike Moen.
Next to North Carolina, a state that has seen a surge in clean energy projects from solar farms in the east to electric vehicle manufacturing hubs across the state. Advocates warn the momentum is now in jeopardy as Congress weighs a rollback of clean energy tax credits.
Will Scott with EDF Action says the credits have fueled job growth and helped lower energy costs for families, particularly in rural communities. Scott says eliminating these incentives could be detrimental to families and economic growth.
Repealing these credits could increase North Carolina families' power bills by $200 a year. At a time of continued inflation, we can't afford to reduce our access to the cheapest available energy sources that are clean. So repealing these incentives would not only damage our economy, but it would leave us ill-prepared to tackle the rapidly rising demand for energy.
Shantia Hudson reporting.
Next, Mississippi ranks among the worst states for maternal mental health care, receiving an F on a new national report card, far below the national average of C-. Caitlin Murphy is a research scientist at George Washington University's School of Public Health.
It's becoming increasingly well known that the scope of maternal mental health need in the U.S. is massive. Right now, maternal mental health disorders do impact 1 in 5 mothers in the U.S.
These conditions now represent the leading cause of maternal mortality. This is Public News Service. New reports show that the state of New York faces multi-billion-dollar budget cuts if the federal budget reconciliation bill passes in its current form.
The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office report finds what's known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act would cost the state government more than $15 billion annually and kick 1.5 million New Yorkers off their health insurance. Medicaid cuts of this magnitude would also affect hospitals statewide. Nathan Gusdorf with the Fiscal Policy Institute says the domino effects wouldn't end there.
The act will also reduce federal funding for food stamps, or SNAP, a program that keeps 3 million low-income New Yorkers from going hungry. But it requires state governments to fill in these spending gaps, which could cost New York State up to $2.1 billion annually.
He notes New York elected officials will have to choose between spending cuts to safety net programs or new tax measures to fund them. Proponents of the federal budget reconciliation bill, as it's now written, say it would cut wasteful government spending and extend tax breaks. But the CBO report finds it would add almost $2.5 trillion to the federal deficit. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
And the Mississippi River tops a new list of America's most endangered rivers, in part because federal officials propose shifting flood disaster costs to the states.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA's acting chief, advocates moving recovery responsibilities to state government. But Eileen Shader with the group American Rivers, which issued the new report, warns this could destabilize flood protections for communities along the Mississippi.
The Trump administration has called for FEMA to be dramatically changed, if not eliminated. And we thought it was really important to highlight the importance of FEMA and the federal role in managing disasters like flooding to our local communities.
The 2025 Most Endangered Rivers report points out that this is the Mississippi's 13th appearance on the list, citing the river's history of catastrophic floods that have shaped national disaster policies. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Finally, folks in New Mexico will gather in Las Cruces, Taos, and other locations tomorrow for a day of action to defend national monuments and public lands.
The second Trump administration has renewed calls to sell off public lands to save the government money. Maya King Flaherty with the Sierra Club Rio Grande chapter says advocates are rallying to prevent public lands from being turned over to states, industry groups, and developers.
We're really trying to inform the public about the senseless attacks on our public lands that the administration is moving forward with, to call on our congressional delegates in New Mexico to keep pushing back and letting them know that their constituents are behind them.
I'm Roz Brown.
The Washington Post reported the Trump administration had included New Mexico's Organ Mountains Desert Peaks in a list of six national monuments for potential mining activities and a reduction in protections. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to the WGXC Afternoon Show. I'm Lucy, your First Friday host. I will be live in the Catskill studio on the first Friday of every month from 5 to 6, chatting with interesting people from around the area. I'm all set up in the window of 393 Main Street, so if you're around, wander by and give us a wave. Joining me today in the studio is Bruce Byers, a prolific photographer with a career spanning decades. Hello, Bruce. Welcome to the show.
How you doing? It's great to be here.
I want to jump right in and cover some facts with you before we go any further, because I feel like we have a ton to talk about. Starting off, you have a show currently on view at Cafe Joust, which is right here in Catskill, called La Italia.
Yes. So it's my collection of Italian work over the last probably 25 years. And Joust and I have joined together. She's going to be cooking Italian food. She's put it on her menu. And so it's a collaboration, and Joust has developed their space, which is quite large, into kind of a gallery space. And so you have a cafe and a gallery, which is kind of neat. And very good food and very good coffee and tea and vegan and, you know, whatever you want, you have there.
Yeah, Lauren, the owner of Joust, is fantastic and has created a beautiful collaborative space and is a wonderful advocate for artists. And your work is street photography is your specialty, and that's the work that you have on view there at Joust, correct?
Yes. So, I've been shooting since probably 1964, and my love has always been to hear the shutter click. So, and to get stuff done on the street has been amazing, and one of my favorite photographers is Cartier-Bresson.
The decisive moment.
And I have been chasing the decisive moment, yes, for many, many years.
Yes.
If I always say to my friends, if I won the lottery, give me my Leica, a bunch of film, and I'll be sending it back to the lab, and you won't be seeing.
We'll never see you again.
You'll never see me again.
I've always thought, you know, I grew up with a family in the area, as you grew up in the area as well.
Copaic Falls.
I grew up in Germantown, and my family was hunters. You know, it was a great history of hunting. And even though I did have my hunting license, I never went hunting. But I feel like once I started taking pictures, I kind of was like, oh, maybe this is what it feels like, that hunting for the right, wandering around in the environment and waiting for something to happen. And then when you finally get it, it's that moment of, excitement, and you captured it.
Right.
Maybe it's fishing or something. I don't know.
Well, my father was the minister at St. John in the Wilderness in Copaic Falls. And I was born in Reno, so we moved.
Oh.
instead of a military brat, I was a church brat. So we moved with the church.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So he carried a Minox, mm-hmm, which is a fantastic camera, mm-hmm, which they still had the film, and a 16mm film camera, Kodak film camera, and my mother carried a Rolleiflex.
Wow.
So
wait, so both photographers?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say photographer, but they loved it.
Yeah, it wasn't just point and shooting.
Yeah. So we always had our family you know, I got tons and tons of family photos, but they couldn't tell me not to take pictures.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, what are you doing? Right. So back to the show at Joust. So it's on view now.
It's on view now.
So if people wanted to find more information about that before we get lost in the discussion of photography, where can they find you? Online, on social media?
Yeah, on social media is Bruce Byers at Instagram, also Hill Street Gallery Catskill, and then hillstreetgallery.com. You can see the whole show on hillstreetgallery.com, and also you can see it right at Joust.
Yes.
While you sip your coffee as you walk around.
When is it up until?
Till Solstice on the 21st.
Oh, nice. Okay. And there are some events coming up that Joust will be hosting.
Yes.
If people were interested in that, where, you know, when are those events happening?
They're happening. There's a dinner on the 14th.
The 14th.
And then on Solstice.
And that's Italian.
All Italian food. Yep. And then Solstice, definitely stop by there. Mm-hmm. We're going to have music. We're going to, you know, the whole town is going to be lit up. So, you know, that we're all part of the Solstice events.
And there's music right now.
Yes,
there?
Music I heard that. Right now. Yep.
Literally as we speak, if you were bored and didn't want to listen to us anymore, you could wander down to Joust. It's a cello? A cellist is playing?
Yeah, cellist playing, yeah.
Nice. Wonderful. So I wanted to talk a little bit. We've established that you're a street photographer. That's your, you know, your main aesthetic. But you have done commercial work as well throughout your career. Now, did you ever venture into studio work, or have you always been able to get your street style into your commercial work as well?
Well, I've always had the camera, the black and white film since the 60s, and I went to RIT in Rochester. Mm-hmm. And then I came down, I said I'd never going to go to New York, and I ended up in New York in 75.
Of course.
And then I started doing advertising, fashion catalogs, mm-hmm. Literally any kind of work that I didn't care pigeonhole myself.
Yes.
So everything from aircraft carriers to cruise ships to you name it, interesting enough, I put down my 35 black and white in 78 and did all this commercial work. And then in early 90s, I picked up the Leica camera again and started my street moments. And I went back into my negatives from the 60s and early 70s, and I was shooting the same way, and I almost picked up where I dropped off.
Nice.
And it was kind of interesting, because all of a sudden I started seeing those moments in time.
Mm-hmm.
That they were appearing. I go, wait a second, now they're appearing again. And so it was really fun.
Yeah, so. That's great. And you've had a long career, a long prolific career.
Yeah.
You've published a couple books as well over the years. How many do you know offhand?
probably 7 or 8.
Wow.
Then the first major one was Street Moments, New York, which was a series of street moments on New York. And then during COVID, I started photographing the nurses, as almost everybody else did. And I got asked to photograph and for about 14 weeks, and then they wanted a book.
Oh, wow.
So I was able to create a book in that book were about 1,500 copies were produced, and they gave those books to each one of the nurses.
Oh, wow. So that started as a personal thing you were doing on your
very
own.
Very personal. Very personal.
And then the hospital then
well,
asked
no,
you?
the union.
Oh, the union.
The union, the nurses' union. Mm-hmm. And I've never heard from the hospital because, you know, the union and the hospital. Yeah. So it was fantastic because... the first day I photographed, I then came back the next day with about 20 prints the first day. And I said to the nurse, do you know any of these people? And they said, oh, yeah, that's Susan. And I came back for the next 14 weeks every day.
Wow.
So we wallpapered the cafeteria with about 2,500 prints.
Wow.
And that was the only way to get them to the nurses, mm-hmm. because they were in the hospital and I couldn't go in the hospital because of COVID.
Yeah.
So it was pretty fantastic.
And now when you photograph them, did you photograph them Because everybody, if, I don't know if anybody remembers, but the, all the nurse, everybody would come outside.
Would come outside.
At 7?
7 o'clock, for 7 o'clock clapping. So at 6:59, there was absolutely nobody on the street. At 7 o'clock, there were 200 nurses, fire trucks, police, screaming, banging, everything for about 10 minutes.
Wow.
And it all disappeared.
Wow.
So in about the second week in, there weren't as many nurses, and I asked the nurse what's going on, and they said that COVID was getting better, and they sent home the traveling nurses because the nurses were pulled in from different places.
Okay.
And I started setting up a studio on the street.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, were you
and inviting? And I had certain nurses that were kind of my reps, and they would go into the hospital and say, "Come on, you got to get out of here. You got to get out." So
that's a good in to have.
Yeah.
So you would set up a backdrop on the street,
yep,
and pull them in for a portrait.
Right, because wow. there was two other hospitals that the nurses were at,
mm-hmm,
down in Greenwich Village and on 63rd Street or wherever it was, and so I went to each one of them and photographed and
wow,
put the canvas up and everything else. So.
And how many did you say do you think you photographed?
The book probably had about 600 nurses out of 1,300
wow,
that were in the union. But the trouble was the triage nurses couldn't get out.
Oh.
They were in for
just
the long run.
The whole shift. Wow.
And they didn't have enough gear to come out and then change to go back in.
Oh.
So there was a limitation on that. So I would get some of the nurses after their shift,
okay,
when they didn't have to go back in. So
interesting. And then that became a book, as you said.
That became a book. And then that book went down to Greenwich Village, Lenox Hill Greenwich Village, and we did a book on that hospital.
Oh, wow.
And that was fantastic. And then I've been going to Cuba for the last 15 years, taking photographers down on trips to Cuba. And I produced a book, 260-page book on Cuba, which was fantastic. And it was all of my friends and pictures and really digging into Cuba. And every time I went down there, I had an artist with me,
mm-hmm,
and very famous artist in Cuba. And we decided last 2 years we're going to do a book on the Cuban artist.
Wow.
So I did a book.
I had a contact.
And he was always with me. And we always went into Cuban artist studios and everything else. So I photographed the artist. I gave him two pieces of 12 by 12 piece of really nice paper. And they created art. And they gave me the art.
Oh, wow.
I brought down photographs. I traded them,
mm-hmm,
art for art. And then I put a book together called The Art and Soul of the Cuban Artist.
Wow.
And so that came out really well. And it was accepted incredibly well because my friend would take it to these organizations and they would look at it and they'd go, "Where did that come from?"
Yeah.
You know, it's like... You know, there's 70 artists all the way across Cuba in this one book.
Wow.
It'd be like if you did every single artist in Catskill.
Yeah. You know? No, it's a great documentation.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems like the through line with all the work of yours that I've seen is that it's always about, you know, capturing a moment, even though the moment might be a larger story, a book. It's about documenting and capturing a moment in time.
Right.
Maybe it's not a split second decisive moment, but it's a moment in time. So why Cuba, actually? You know, how did that come about?
I went down. My fraternity brother still does go down there for quite a bit, and he had a company that kind of dealt with down there. So I went on a trip, and he was just doing business, and he had could care less about photography. So in the background, I'm running around all over the place taking pictures. And I decided to put together a travel company called Camera Odysseys.
Oh, wow.
So Camera Odysseys, and that takes photographers and people who love photography. You know, just everybody loves taking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Let's learn how to do it right.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And in such a colorful environment.
But I also went into Nepal and Bhutan and China, into India. So it didn't matter. It didn't matter where we were going. And I also took two or three people into a, it was Bangladesh on a medical mission. Mm-hmm. So I document medical missions. So I would follow the doctors, almost like Doctors Without Borders, mm-hmm. and that type. And I would introduce the photographer to the OR, which a lot of photographers say, yeah. Keep me out of here.
I'm not sure I can handle that.
And I can remember when the one woman that was with me, she's standing over in the corner, and the operating room is right in front, the doctor's operating right in front of me. I said, get over here. And I said, take pictures here. The only thing you have to watch out for is his scalpel.
Oh, my God!
If his scalpel comes up, just make sure that you're not in the way, and he'd care less what you do.
Yeah, right.
And so it was very, very informative. It actually helped my photography, because it kind of let me do whatever I wanted to do, so I kind of developed different things. Mm-hmm. I did books off of it. We went into International Catholic Migration Committee into the Middle East, and I did a book on them. And afterwards, I sent them the book. I have the PDF of the book, and they go, "Where'd you get the words for this?" I said, "I got it from your website." He says, "Oh, we have to change the website."
Oh.
But I ended up. It was when the Pope had, not the current Pope, mm-hmm. but the Pope had passed away, and all the cardinals were in Rome,
mm-hmm.
and they called me up and said, we need books. And so we actually sold 750 books.
Wow.
Just off of a, hey, look at what I did for you.
Yeah.
I was a kind of a gift to the owner, to the client. Mm-hmm. Just like, hey, put this together. Hey, you know.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
No, that's great. So let's go back in time a little bit. You said your parents both took pictures, whether right. they considered themselves photographers or not, but they did. You were around cameras, so obviously that would rub off on you. So, you know, you imitate your parents.
Right.
Do you have a specific point? Because you did go to, as you mentioned, you went to RIT for photography. That's the Rochester Institute of Technology. Was there a point in time when that you can remember that you really thought, okay, this is it. This is what I want to do. This is what I need to do, is be a photographer, you know, in high school, or, you know, do you have that kind of moment?
Well, I always had the, I'm dating myself heavily for photographers, the Instamatic, mm-hmm. the Kodak Instamatic, yep. which was a little plastic yep. thing you dropped in the back.
Yep.
And I could still remember processing my very first roll of film. And we went to London with my family when I was 8, and I was at the changing of the guard, and I'm watching these guys playing with their cameras and everything else. And we walked by this camera store. I can still remember, if I could draw, I could draw it today. And all these cameras. I said to my dad, "I want one of those." And he said, "Well, you're gonna have to mow an awful lot of lawns." But it was literally 180 pounds in 1964.
Wow.
I mean, and that camera kind of was like, I kind of was already there, but that camera was, that kind of made it serious.
Yeah.
And so I carried that into, literally traded that for my first Nikon.
Mm-hmm.
Then I bought my first Leica in high school. I went to Marvelwood School in Cornwall, Connecticut, mm-hmm. and we got a journalist from the Ford Foundation hired as our art teacher.
Wow.
Which was fantastic, because he was a really good journalist, and my mentor. And there's a book, one of my next books is about the last 3 weeks of my high school. I spent 3 weeks photographing and learning how to be a blacksmith. My family raised horses along with the church and everything else. You gotta have churches and horses.
Yeah.
They all go together. And so I photographed him while he's teaching me how to be. And so I have all those negatives. I still have the negatives from the 60s. And so I'm going to be putting that together. So as I was going along, well, RIT or there's another school in Massachusetts. I couldn't draw well enough to get into that. RISD.
Yeah.
RISD. I couldn't draw well. You know, they wanted me to three drawings. I want to be a photographer, not an artist. And so I went to RIT, but my SATs were horrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely horrible. But my cat and dog portfolio got me into RIT.
Yeah.
Four interviews to get into RIT.
Oh, wow.
And I went there because my father wanted me to get a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't need a photography. I had already been doing photography for 10 years before I got there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I can remember the very first class. We're going to take the guy says, we're going to bring your cameras tomorrow. We're going to take pictures. Oh, fantastic. You know, the next day we get there and he says, do you have your film? Yes. Do you have your camera? Yes. Does everybody know how to load their camera?
You're like, wait, what?
And I go,
isn't that why we're here?
And literally I taught the two students to either side of me how to load their camera.
Oh, my goodness. But we, you know, so when you were at RIT, we were discussing before our interview here today, you were introduced to New York City a couple times because you had said you weren't going to go there.
Right.
So you did you ended up moving to New York City?
Well, the teacher, my junior and sophomore year, a man by the name of Charlie Arnold, really good guy. He would take us down to all of his. He had a whole bunch of students that had then become photographers in New York. So we'd go down and visit their studios, which was fantastic. I mean, 20 of us would, you know, knock, knock, we're here.
Yeah.
And you know, these guys would sit there and embrace us because they knew that they used to be us.
Yeah.
And I always said that, you know, that was kind of, that RIT didn't want that to happen because maybe you wouldn't come back to school.
You're like, wait, I can just do this now.
Right, I can do this now. But that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then my last quarter, I had kind of doubled up. I went to some stuff in the summer and doubled up. I spent my last quarter down in New York. And that was in 75. And then in 78, I got my first studio and did a lot of studio work, a lot of location work. And then my last studio was in 2004.
Oh, wow.
Because I was sick and tired of sweeping floors. And the world was a much better studio.
Yes. So New York City obviously is a great place for street photography.
It is, but it's getting, it used to be a lot better. But now that people don't want you taking pictures.
That's so interesting. So I am myself a photographer. And I was going to say something the same thing because I kind of came up right on the cusp of digital.
Mm-hmm.
I lived half of my life without any kind of social media or cell phone or anything like that. And then the second half, I've had all of those things. So I find a shift in people as well. It's really interesting. When you had a camera, a real camera, back in the day, I found that people would get excited, and they wanted you to take their picture.
Yep.
And you kind of fought against, you kind of wanted to be invisible, but the kind of photographer that I am, I love to talk to strangers. I love to make portraits of them with their, you know, when they want it, to, you know, when they're participating and collaborating with you. But nowadays, it's a suspicion.
Yep.
You're met with a suspicion. And it becomes kind of frustrating, especially if you are like me and you want to talk to the people and you want to photograph them. Well, what are you going to do with it? Why do you want it? You know, so that is an interesting thing about being a street photographer. And a lot of the work that I saw of yours, well, it kind of goes either way. There are images that you've had where the subject is a participant, is a collaborator. They're looking at you. They know that you're there. But a lot of the work, too, is you're capturing that decisive moment. So you're not necessarily being a voyeur, but you don't want them aware of you. You just want to capture the moment. How has that kind of changed?
Well, most of the time, as I'm walking down the street and I have my camera underneath my jacket, I get this sense that I got to take my camera out. And then one of my favorite photographs was a woman standing in front of Bergdorf Goodman. And it was an older woman. She was in a full mink with her hair all done. And I was coming around the plaza, And I go, I got to take my camera out. And I took my camera out. I walked around a corner, and there was my street moment. I took it, and I walked on.
Yeah.
She had no idea that I took the picture. If she had an idea that she took the picture, she either would have stood there or she would have moved away, and I wouldn't have gotten the photograph.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people say, well, you've got to ask. And I've been yelled at and everything else by other people saying that it's not right to do the decisive moment.
Mm-hmm.
But if most people that I take the picture and capture in a decisive moment and I walk on, they go, he just took a picture. And the 2 seconds later, it's gone out of their mind.
Yeah.
They have no idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, but painting, going to a museum.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the way that people paint. They paint people sitting and doing, and, you know, they're capturing life.
Yeah.
And nobody's yelling and screaming at them.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, I definitely think it's, like I said, it's gotten worse. And I understand it, but it definitely has changed. There's no longer that excitement of, like, oh, you've got a camera. What are you doing? Take a picture of me doing this, and which can be annoying at times. But other times it's like you're making a connection with people in a much easier way than I feel like you do today.
Right.
There's a lot more suspicion.
I got caught up in Istanbul. I was going to I wanted to go to the Leica store in Istanbul, a gallery in Istanbul, and the guys told me where it was. And there was also an area of Istanbul where the women still sit on the balconies.
And, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
and so I'm walking down the street and there's some kids playing on the right side, but they were reflected in the window on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking a picture of their reflection. Well, the night before, I had just photographed in a men's card club, and we were having a great old time taking pictures. Well, this was a card club guy, you know, more of the mafioso kind of card club. And this guy comes out half my size and grabs onto my arm.
Oh.
And we're walking. I'm still walking. I'm 6'1", so you have to have a little bit more than 5'5" to take it.
Yeah.
Well, his buddy, who was 6'1", gets on my other side. And I couldn't figure out. I'm sitting there racking my brain, and I had done it with my digital camera.
Oh.
And I had my Leica sitting, which is film.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, oh, I'm going to show it to him, and I'm going to delete it. And I showed it to him. I deleted it. Their hands released, and I walked away. And boy, did I walk away.
Yeah.
But then during COVID, I'm standing on right across from Macy's, and I'm photographing, and I'm standing there for 20 minutes. And that's what I do. I become part of the scene.
Yeah.
And then everybody ignores me.
Yeah.
And this guy nailed me like I got hit by a car. I knocked me down real hard. And he said I was taking his picture, but he hit me from behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I
over the shoulder over behind you picture.
And I got up, and his buddy gets in my face. So it was two of them at me.
Yeah.
And then I go home, really bruised the heck out of my hip. And it was first time, that was the second time in 60 years that I've had any problem.
Wow.
So I could go into Bangladesh. I can go into China. I can go into England, France. Really no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, New York is...
Yeah. Right.
But I still get away with it.
A little more on edge.
I still get away with it.
But it is, do you find, so the way that you move around, let's just say a crowd, without a camera versus with a camera, I find that that's an interesting change, at least for myself. It almost becomes like the camera is some sort of, you know, shield. Like if I go to a show, a music, you know, event, a live music performance, and I don't have my camera, which is rare, but if I don't, I kind of just stand in one spot, and but the minute I have my camera, it gives me a point of focus. It gives me a job to do. And then all of a sudden, no rules apply to me.
Right.
And I'm almost on the stage, but you know, everybody's just looking at me like I'm supposed to be there. It changes things.
Yep.
There is some sense that, you know, it gives you some sort of, you know, ability to just move freely. Whereas when you don't have the camera, the rules apply to you.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed that, or?
Well, I think that if anybody knows what a Leica M6 is or 10 or whatever, they kind of almost, and it, I got it taped up so you don't see the name on it. It almost looks like a tourist camera.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
yeah.
And I'm 6'1". I couldn't be any more waspy than, yeah. I'm sorry, but they see me coming a mile away. So I walk with ways of hiding my camera until I need it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I know that I'm, look, they could see me coming.
Yeah.
So when I don't have my camera, I'm pissed.
Yeah.
Because I forgot my camera.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've gone into a store and I bought an SD card just because I forgot to put the SD card back in my camera. I don't need that. Yeah. I got 10 of them at home, but I need to be able to take a picture.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it becomes some sort of compulsive behavior, I feel like, if I'm not documenting everything. Did it even happen? Which made it interesting with cell phones, too.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. My brother goes to Europe for 3 months. The first week, I think we talked on the phone 5 times as to how to take pictures. Like, you only known me for 60 years. You could have asked me before you went there.
But now I have a camera in my pocket.
Well, but he's got a cell phone.
Yeah.
He's got to learn that he has a camera.
Yeah.
It's a camera.
Yeah.
So I do teach people with how to use that as a camera. Yes, mm-hmm. It's a phone. Mine's a phone too. But the best camera is the one that's in your hand.
Exactly. Oh, thank you for saying that. So, we were talking about ego before, and I feel like, yes, do what you can with what you have.
Right.
It's still a camera. Yeah, and as long as you get that shot, you get that shot, no matter what the camera is.
Well, I always tell people that I see with my eyes, I capture with my camera.
Mm-hmm.
My camera is hopefully the best Xerox machine that I can carry.
Mm-hmm.
So I happen to have some rather expensive cameras, not because I love expensive cameras. It's because that particular camera I have, and if anybody knows the Leica cameras,
mm-hmm.
they're very good cameras.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had it for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
the exact same camera,
yeah.
30 years. And
but that's film.
It's film.
Because we were talking about that before, too, is that it used to be that your camera stayed the same. As long
right.
as your camera was actual glass and actual metal, your camera was as good as it was going to be.
Right.
And the film technology changed.
It changed.
And that was what was so wonderful, is that your camera had its own quirks and idiosyncrasies, and they were all kind of, they all had their little differences. And then, so you could have that forever. And
yep.
you knew that thing like the back of your hand. You knew all of those quirks. And then you would just get better and better and better film. And nowadays, with digital, I get so frustrated because by the time I learned that camera, now there's another one, and you don't necessarily need the best and the brightest and whatever, but the other technology that the images end up on, whether it's a screen or a printer or whatever, those things change.
Right.
So you do have to upgrade. And yeah, that's gotten frustrating for me.
Well, about 5 years ago, there's a store down in New York on 22nd Street, PhotoCare.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been buying from them for 40 years. And I went into my closet and I pulled out all of this stuff, my old Bolex, my one of my Hasselblads, a Nikon, whatever. And I had him sell it. And then I very specifically bought I shoot with the Canon R5 and the 5D Mark IV. But I shoot with the Leica M6 and the Leica 10R. I will never get another camera
mm-hmm.
for the rest. That's it.
Yeah.
They are as best as anything's going to get.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to work them as best as I can. And now it's my eye.
Yes.
My eye.
Yes.
You can take just as great of a camera with your cell phone as you can with my Leica.
Yeah.
And you could take just as crappy of one.
Yeah. Yeah, because as long as you're not struggling with your tools,
right.
I mean, it's a tool.
Yeah.
So once you learn that tool, then you can forget that part, and then you're making the images.
Yeah.
And you're not being bogged down by, which button is it? Where is this? Where is that?
Yeah.
That's frustrating.
And I think very much like yourself, when we were just talking about, you coach your softball, the girl's
yeah.
softball, it's, and I'm going to bug you about going and doing portraits.
Mm-hmm.
you've done portraits and you've taken pictures of those kids.
Yep.
And I'm going to, if we get it working and going, I'm going to do the same. And they're going to be completely different pictures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just because they're the same kids,
mm-hmm.
but two different photographers, two different eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the wonderful thing
yeah.
about collaboration, about letting people into your different worlds.
Yep.
And that's what we're doing with Joust.
Mm-hmm.
They got the great food. I got the great photography. Let's put it together.
Yeah.
Let's see what we can do. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always loved photo for that reason. You know, you can all take the same picture of the Eiffel Tower, but they'll all be different.
Yeah.
Because what do you choose to include? What do you choose to exclude? Which angle? Which lens? You know, these are all decisions that photographers make when they're making an image, which is why, you know, it's really never possible to be objective as a photographer, even though that's, you know, people have seen it over the years as, well, a photograph is truth, a photograph is reality. I made some choices, even pre-AI, I made some choices that make my photo different from your photo, different from their photo.
Right.
It's so interesting. Well, we're getting towards the end of our time. We have about 15 minutes left, but I wanted to make sure that we talked about the Hill Street Gallery,
yep.
which is a gallery that you have right here in Catskill on Hill Street.
On Hill Street.
and tell us about that. I know you have your own work up there. Are there hours? If people wanted to check it out, when could they visit?
So for the last 2 months, a lot of my concentration has been with the gallery at Joust, but we have a also Italian wall at Hill Street Gallery. And if anybody knows of Hill Street, and a lot of people in Catskill don't know where Hill Street is.
I didn't know what it was called, honestly. I knew exactly. I was like, oh, that house, of course.
Right.
But I was like, what? It has a name?
Yeah. So it was the old office of the lumber yard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a great gallery next door to it. So as we say, you have to walk through the art to get to the art.
Yep.
So we've put together the it's a two-car garage that you can't put a car in because it faces the garden.
Yeah. That is funny. I didn't even think of that.
Right. So I always going to have a wall of my fine artwork, which mm-hmm. is fiber-based prints, which means in the dark room.
I was going to say, a lot for of people them, who don't know.
Right. A lot of them are signed, and all the fiber base are signed and numbered.
Mm-hmm.
So, and some are 30, 40 years old. And then,
look just as amazing today yep. as they did 30 years ago, I'm sure.
Right. And, you know, the difference is the digital print is a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Push the button, it's going to come out. The fiber base, I'm doing it in a dark room. I'm the artist. Each one is going to be different. They might look the same, but they're different because
yep.
I can't do them all exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have the old print shop down in New York City has given me images of this area, Catterskill Falls,
oh, wow.
and then Bartlett prints and that type of stuff. So I have a series there. They got some wonderful maps on Italy, which we added to the show. And then I have my large black and white and color prints from Cuba, from all over the world. So it's we can almost put a different show up every week.
Yeah.
You know, and I try to collaborate. There's an artist who is going to bring in his sculptures.
Oh, nice.
And we're going to put the sculptures in the garden.
Oh, in the garden.
So you walk
the garden
through
is amazing, by the way.
Yeah.
So I feel like everybody, at least locally, would know, even if they didn't know it was called Hill Street, they would know that garden. It's a secret garden. It's magical. You can't see inside. There's a little arched kind of cutout in the bushes. That would be great, a sculpture show in the garden.
Yeah, it's next to two parking lots full of construction equipment. They've decided now we're going to put every parking
perfect
lot.
Perfect staging ground.
Staging ground. No, but it's all online also at hillstreetgallery.com.
Okay.
Which is fantastic. So you can say, hey, I love that print, and I can literally make it a billboard. out mm-hmm. of it. I can make a 4x5. However, and the whole nine yard thing is that I also have portfolios of prints,
mm-hmm.
so you can pick and choose to make a portfolio.
Oh yeah,
that you could walk away with.
Nice.
And also with I probably have about 150 pieces of Cuban art.
Oh, from the book. From the book.
So as every time last time I came back from Cuba, we came back with about 20 pieces. The time before that, we came back with about 150.
Wow.
So as there's a sale on a piece of Cuban art, I will then take the money back to Cuba, knock on his door and say, here, now, I need another piece.
Wow.
And they'll come back with another piece. And they'll go, where did you sell that?
Yeah.
I sold that to, you know, someone in Oklahoma.
Yeah. It's
sitting on their wall. And they love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
So we have about 10 minutes left. So I kind of wanted to talk about, you know, how you came back here to the area. I always ask my guests how they ended up here. You were raised in Copaig Falls.
Raised in Copaig Falls.
Did a lot of traveling. Why Catskill?
We had a, if anybody knows architecture, an eyebrow colonial in the town of Sherman, Connecticut.
Hmm.
About 1995, we bought this very small little eyebrow colonial, 1700s. Vintage of the house, and raised my daughter there and everything else. And I also photographed the town for 14 years.
I want to interrupt and say that you said the date of the house, the age of the house, because I always joke that that's like a Northeast street cred kind of
right.
thing. Well, my house is from right. the 1800s. Well, my house, I love that.
Well, it's interesting because it gives you, I mean, the Catskill is 1740,
mm-hmm,
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody says, well, this building is 1600s, go, wait a second. No, there was a tree there then.
Yeah. Mine was 1919. It's like brand new.
Right. But the town is 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the town here is that.
Yeah.
So it was on the lake of Candlewood Lake. So we had my daughter was growing up in that,
mm-hmm.
and then we sold before COVID, and COVID hit. You know, we couldn't do anything. I got involved in the books and everything else. And
You were still in New York City then.
Still in New
had
York.
Your apartment there.
Yeah, and we still had the apartment in New York. And I've got all these boxes of prints from all my work, and I wanted a place to put on the wall. So mm-hmm. we went off looking for another place. And we went all to Great Barrington. We went to Rhinebeck. We went, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And this place showed up because it had a two-car garage that I could put my work up.
Yeah,
and the basement is twice the size of the gallery, so I could even expand it. So that kind of gave me the reason to come. And Catskill is great. It's got Hudson across the
mm-hmm.
across the river, which we're trying to bring all the people from the from Hudson over mm-hmm. to Catskill, and so. I should have done something in the 60s when I was,
yeah.
but you know, I've always loved the Northeast.
Yeah.
My brother's down in the South, my other brother's in Alaska. And I keep saying, hey, Northeast, we all grew up in the Northeast.
Yeah.
Come back. It's great here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a lot of pictures to take around here.
Yeah.
I've been concentrating on putting the gallery together. So I haven't really gotten out into the woods mm-hmm. and out into the, you know, to create around here yet.
Yeah, it's a magical place, that's yeah. for sure, which I didn't appreciate growing up here. I had to leave and then realize what a magical place it is here. And what a kind of a melting pot of people,
yeah.
too. I mean, there are so many incredibly interesting people around here, and artists. I mean, artists like everywhere.
Well, the off of the I can't sh- we're on the radio. I can't show you the invite, but I just gave you an invite. Mm-hmm. I won a grant from Create, and it's on creating portraits. Come to my gallery to create a portrait. So if I run into you, I give you one of the invites, and hopefully you show up and you're part of the show.
Yeah, that would be so. Portraits of Catskill.
Yeah.
So you'll be photographing, you know, people from Catskill. So what is your what do you think, ballpark? How many pictures do you want to take? What's your goal?
I need to photograph 60 or 70 people.
Yeah.
And then end up with 40 in the book.
Nice.
Or 40 in the show.
Nice.
And that's not an easy task.
No.
Because I might invite you, but then I got to say, come on. You know? And then you get into getting the picture taken, mm-hmm. and you have an absolute wonderful time. And then you see hopefully I'm successful, mm-hmm. and you go, wow. I should have done this a long time ago.
Yep. So that'll end up, like, as you said, as a show and a book.
Hopefully a book,
Portraits of Catskill.
Yeah. And I know there's been a lot of pictures of people with Catskill and portraits. But again, we could take the exact same picture, the exact same person, and to be like two different photographers.
And a different time.
A different time.
Yeah, a different time, a different documentation. I hope that people come out for that, and you can do a real deep dive into the demographics here, you know, and not, you know, just a surface level, selection of people and really get into the fantastic people that live around here.
Well, it's a matter of, I was telling you, I saw two guys in the liquor store today, the great beards, and I really wanted to talk to him, but I didn't have the invites in my hand at the particular time.
Yeah.
But it would have been interest. First, I got to say, are you from Catskill?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, because it's all about Catskill.
Yep.
And if they say yes, then I'm going to continue. If they say no, then they're going to wonder, what are you asking?
Yeah,
why
do you want to know that? During COVID, I did portraits on the street of people. Which actually was really hard to find people because it was in the middle of COVID and nobody was walking around. Where were they going? That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And actually only like two people said no. But yeah, I just set up my little backdrop on the sidewalk. It was really kind of selfish in the beginning. I just needed to go outside. I was home with my kids a lot.
Well, remember during COVID, I did 14 weeks.
Yes, yeah,
and
yeah.
And I had to get people.
Yep.
I had to get as many nurses as I possibly could. But I would then, people would walk by and just come into the gap. Come in. And 80% of the people came in.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that really didn't want to have to do with COVID.
Yeah.
But then what are you doing in this crowd of people?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, wait a second.
You should go home. Well, thank you so much for stopping by the studio.
Yeah.
And talking with me. Let's just, before we have a couple minutes left, talk about, again, tell the people what your social media, your website. Again, that's Cafe Joust. You have La Italia on view right now. And when's the dinner? Is on the
on the 14th.
June 14th.
Yep. And it's an invite.
Okay.
So just email me and I'll send you out an invite.
You can go find you through your website, which is
hillstreetgallery.com.
Hillstreetgallery.com.
And then please follow me at Hill Street Gallery Catskill.
Catskill.
And also Bruce Byers.
And that's B-Y-E-R-S. Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Bruce. I feel like I'm like, what did we even talk about? We talked about so much stuff. So stop by Cafe Joust if you're around, and thanks again.
Sounds great.
Thanks again, and
we'll be
watching for that Portraits of Catskill book in the future.
Yep, and we'll do any talks, and you know, if you want to talk photography, there's two of us.
Yeah.
Right? We could talk forever. You know,
forever.
Two different worlds talking about the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, different generations, all with the same goal.
Yeah.
For the decisive moment.
Right.
All right. Thank you so much. It was great to talk to you.
Thanks.